I'll rebind.
Okay.
I'd like to go ahead and call this discussion session to order. Today is August 11th, 2015, and this is our 2015-2016 goals discussion session. Dr. Rendell?
Thank you, Chairman McCain. I'm not really sure how to proceed with this necessarily, because I've never done this before. But what I did do is review Dr. Adams' goals and objectives for last year, and use that as kind of a guidepost for how I organized what I'm going to give you in a few minutes as goals and objectives for the year. I did organize them into five areas: student achievement, safety and security, employee development, school community relations, and technology integration. And it's my understanding this will be a living document today, subject to additions, deletions, subtractions, and whatever input you guys might have for me. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and give you each a copy of the document. What I've tried to do is think about the things we're going to focus on this year, and what I plan to focus on this year, and put those into this format. I do have copies of Dr. Adams' goals from last year, if you would like to have those to refer to.
You want a copy of that from last year?
No. Okay. Thank you. All right. So in the first area of student achievement, there are three goals. What I do is I developed a pattern. For each of the different focus areas, there are three distinct goals, and then there are three strategies for each goal. And then at the bottom of the page for each of the different focus areas, there are some measurable outcomes. And like I said, these can be added to, deleted, changed, whatever. This is my first blush. So under the area of student achievement, the first goal there says increase achievement scores on all standardized assessments. That is not the only thing we should be measured by, but it is one of the main things we're measured by, and it's kind of what the public understands. Improve classroom instruction. The strategies, the first set, are improve classroom instruction with a focus on collaborative planning, standards-based instruction, and formative assessment. We had the leadership summit last Thursday and Friday, and what I shared with the administrators, the principals and assistant principals there, was that there is no new additional focus for the year. There's no new initiative or anything like that. What we want to do is just focus purely on classroom instruction, on how we can work together to improve classroom instruction. We've done some things over the last couple of years, or many of us have done some things over the last couple of years to improve classroom instruction. A lot of our teachers have received training on standards-based instruction, or how to take a look at the Florida standards and break them down into concrete examples of what students are supposed to know and be able to do at the end of the lesson, and then backwards plan. Okay, if that's what the student has to know and be able to do at the end of the lesson, what do I need to include in the lesson? What should that look like? So we want to continue that work, teachers working together to develop lesson plans based on the standards. We want to have teachers working together to develop common assessments. And then the biggest thing is our administrators have been trained in what's called instructional rounds or classroom walkthroughs, where they go and visit teachers' classrooms together in a group. Then they go out in the hallway and talk about what they just saw, kind of debrief, and they learn from each other about what they picked up and that kind of thing. That's been going on around the state for the last 4 or 5 years. We've been doing it here in the last 2 or 3 years. What we need to do is involve the teachers in that process. They're going to learn more from visiting each other's classrooms or having their peers visit them than they would listening to an administrator that went and visited somebody else's classroom, or even an administrator that went and visited their classroom. So that's going to be one of the challenges this year, is to offer the training and the time and the resources to our teachers so that they can do that. So that kind of encompasses a lot of the stuff in that first bullet. Improve classroom instruction with a focus on collaborative planning, SPI, and formative assessment. Any questions so far? All right. Yes, ma'am.
I do have a question. What kind, you know, there was a report recently, I don't know if it was an education week, where they were questioning the efficacy of professional development, investment that was being made on professional development. You know, in the past, there have been articles talking about how athletes, doctors, musicians, the way they refine their craft is by getting input from someone while they're teaching, because you can do a lot of professional development, but if the application isn't there and the accountability around the application isn't there, it's not going to be effective and it's not going to translate into increased achievement. And
right.
Years ago we did have coaches that, and I know that there weren't enough of them, and I shadowed one year, and this person basically focused on the new teachers, which really needed it because our teachers are so isolated anyway, and then
right.
If you're a new teacher, it's even more complicated. But is there any way of providing some of that support? Is that what your reading coaches and math coaches are doing? What does that look like to really fine-tune that? Because a lot of just the data collection doesn't suffice.
Right. So that is the role of a math coach or reading, a literacy coach or an instructional coach. They are supposed to work with teachers as they teach in the classroom and, you know, model for them or come and visit their classroom and critique and that kind of thing. So we have several of those positions still in place. Those people are still going to be tasked with doing that. What we did hear from the teachers is they don't want anybody from the outside coming and telling them how to do what it is they're doing. They would like to learn from each other. They would like to spend time deconstructing standards. Really, they trust the input and the feedback from their colleagues more so than an outside expert. That doesn't mean that we're not going to hold them accountable for teaching to a high standard. I mean, that's actually what the whole goal is. When we look at employee development, there's some links to this that hopefully we'll cover.
So, do you find that those people that complain about that have students that are excelling, or
it's a mixture? It's a mixture. You could have teachers that they're highly effective and their kids are doing really well in the classroom, saying, "Thanks, but I don't really need an outside expert." But you might also have a teacher who's not doing as well in the classroom, struggling, and the students might be struggling, saying, "Thanks, I don't need any outside help."
Hope you explain that to them. They might need some encouragement there.
Well, the goal that I'm sharing with the faculties next Tuesday in a video announcement is that every teacher will participate in instructional walkthroughs this year, both as a host and as a observer.
Good.
So
that's a good idea.
It's not necessarily a mandate. It's because. Yeah, we'll work
strong
on that.
Suggestion.
It's very strong.
This is
what it's
going to be.
Well, that's it's an expectation. Right.
I do have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Now, there was some discussion, as it became law, that there's a third, a third, and a third. And one of the suggestions from around the state, or one of the ideas from around the state, was that these peer walkthroughs might be that last third.
Right.
I know that there are negotiations occurring locally, and that's obviously something that has to be negotiated in there. Term, but do you think that might be a path forward?
I wouldn't be in favor of that.
Okay.
Brevard did that for the last couple years. They had teachers that were trained in how to do the observations. And the word from Brevard, from the teachers union, and from not really from the teachers union, from teachers who aren't in the union, is that person then became viewed as a pseudo-administrator. And so the trust in value of your colleague was lost because they're no longer your true colleague, because 3 out of 7 periods they're released so they can go do this, so they're not really teaching a full load anymore, and they're now part of
the establishment.
Yeah.
Them. Okay.
Yeah.
This would be more on format. This is all new superintendent, and we have goals. I'm trying to figure out if where to interject some thoughts. Like, if I were to bring up school resource office. I know I could put that into safety and have
right.
a question, but my question would be, would this be the time, since it's student but it's different, to talk about ESC and Wabasa School and the development there? Because there it's a total different, you have quadriplegic, severely retarded student versus
yep.
a student that is highly functional in the classroom but behavioral.
Right.
And so I think most of us were approached about from ARC or different groups of transition and things like that, and it may or may not be a goal that the board would have because of the training, education there is buttoning
right.
a shirt.
Right.
I didn't want to wait to the end and say, you know, gee, that should have been on the first page.
Sure.
Or where. So I'm not sure if we want to circle back to that
end. There may be some of that, you know, once we go through this. Remember,
yeah.
Right now, and this is, as I see it, this is kind of a brand new superintendent that doesn't have that history like we have with Rannigan over and over and over again. Right now, we're at the area of, this is Dr. Rendell's.
That's what I was saying. You want to just keep going, let them go through, and then at the end?
Because at the end, when we get to goals, the goals are the board's goals. And board and working with the superintendent. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying. That's okay. Where we have input.
Sure.
And, you know, hopefully there's measurable outcomes. Sometimes there are, sometimes there's not. The strategies, we don't get involved in strategy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't.
It's the what, not the how.
So we say we want, you know, every school to be painted pink. Okay.
Well, what I'm asking is,
how do you make
is,
that happen? That's up to you.
Do we want to interject them as we go each page, or do we want to wait to the end and then add?
If you think it's relevant to that area, sure.
You know, I would suggest that maybe we go through each focus area, because
that's
I have some too. Just in glancing and listening to what you said, what your objectives, there are some things that I feel are missing.
Sure.
But I want to hear what you have to say first, because they may be nested in there, and I don't want to jump the gun, so to speak. Not that I have one.
There also is the, this is such a, this can be such a big, voluminous area that you can get on focus area one, we start drilling till we hit oil, and it's 3 hours later, we're still on goal two of focus one. So
I just know that the board had discussed
we had said
we would wait to August 11th. So I have been telling those groups that have been contacting me that has to come after August 11th. Okay.
Did you see that list from the
I have seen the list.
Okay, so you're aware.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
I don't think I covered everything on the list, but we'll see.
Okay.
If I didn't, we can add it.
Thank you.
The second bullet under Goal 1, the strategy, is implement a tiered model support for individual schools. One of the things that we've done in St. Lucie in the past is implement a tiered model to support our schools. So your highest functioning schools get the same amount of support that they've always gotten. Your lowest functioning schools or your most needy schools get additional resources, and then you find a balance in the middle of schools that may be not performing well in one area or two, but are performing well in other areas. They get different kinds of resources. It's similar to the tiered model support for students, sometimes referred to as MTSS or RTI. So your tier one schools are the schools that are doing fine, mostly our magnet schools, and the two high schools seem to be doing well with the standard amount of support that they receive. Your tier three at the top of the pyramid would be the schools like your Title I schools or your differentiated or DA schools that are struggling. They're going to get additional resources. Some of them get additional resources already because they have Title I dollars, and we use those to provide them additional resources. Then you have a group of schools in the middle, a couple of our middle schools, a couple of our elementary schools that don't qualify for Title I resources but aren't necessarily performing at the level they should be. So what are we doing for them? Are we providing them any additional resources and that kind of thing? And when I first looked at how we allocated the district resources, we were not. If you were a Title I school, you got additional Title I resources. If you were not a Title I school, everybody got the same. In other words, if there was a math coach and there was only one math coach in the district, that math coach spread their time around visiting all the schools that were not Title I. Then the Title I schools had their own individual math coach. Well, some of those schools in the middle had math needs greater than some of the other schools, but that person wasn't necessarily directed to address or work with those schools more than the other schools. So one of the first things we've done is take a look at math instruction as being one of our weak points. We've added another math coach. One's going to be designated for elementary school, one's going to be designated for secondary. The elementary school person, her time is going to be 3 out of 5 days with a certain set of schools and 2 of the 5 days with the other schools. Same thing with the secondary school. So that's a model of tiered intervention, so to speak, or tiered support for schools. So we're going to do that throughout the year, take a look at what schools need, and if we're not providing those resources, then we may shift resources around. Right now, that's the only addition of a person is the math coach, the additional math coach. And I don't know that we'll need any other additional personnel for that, but it's more of a mind shift change, that not every school gets the same resources. Some schools need other types of resources, so they get that. Any questions on that? Yes.
Yeah, I do have a question, and this is, you know, you mentioned the Title I school. You know, one of the conversations that we were having was the accountability around the stipends that we give the Title I school teachers when we don't see the academic achievement that we want to see.
Right.
And I wonder what role learning gains are going to have in that, because sometimes, you know, the students are making learning gains, but, you know, with these tests, like, they haven't been validated.
Right.
These tests just are, you know, they keep changing everything. And,
right.
And those tests are not really a good indicator of achievement when they're not reliable and valid. So is there going to be any attempt to have any accountability that's based on something realistic like learning gains versus stuff that keeps shifting,
The only thing is, I don't think we're going to be able to calculate learning gains this year. Because we're not going to have anything to compare. When we finally do get the FSA results, we're not going to be able to compare them to FCAT results from the past. So we won't be able to use learning gains. What we will do is use this, the teacher's IPS score, you know, their individual, you know, their instructional practice score that they get from their evaluator. And that's kind of how you determine, it's a factor into their overall performance score, and that's how you would determine whether they were effective or not. And we don't have the other information.
Okay. Yeah, that quantitative data piece is going to be tough this year because they're learning things.
Right. So moving on to the third bullet, develop a real-time data dashboard for administrators and district staff to review student performance. You know, with Focus and some of the other electronic tools that we have available, there really is no reason why we shouldn't be able to take a look at a school's performance real time. Anytime there's a new assessment, that stuff's going to be loaded into Performance Matters, which talks to Focus. So we should be able to take a look at, how a school is doing at any point during the year. And we're creating a data dashboard that includes attendance data, student performance data, number of out-of-school suspensions, in-school suspensions, and all that kind of thing. So it's just kind of a quick one-shot dashboard that Assessment and Accountability is working on putting together, so that every time, for example, when I go visit a school, I can print it out that morning and go to the principal and say, this is what's going on at your school right now. Let's talk about this data or that data. So that's going to help us with student achievement. The principals are going to be able to look at it, and they can already do this in Performance Matters now, but putting it in a school-based format is going to be a little different, but they can go into Performance Matters right now and see how all their teachers are doing and how all their kids are doing. And they do that in the baseball card report and some of the others. All right, so that takes care of goal one, increase achievement scores on all standardized assessments. Those three strategies are not the only things that we're going to be doing, but those are three of the things that we're going to really focus on. The second goal is to maintain support and focus on the Moonshot Moment. Definitely want to continue the partnership with the Learning Alliance and the other community support organizations. We want to evaluate the effectiveness of the initiatives and strategies and monitor progress towards our 2018 target. Foundations was one of the first tools that was used by the Learning Alliance towards the Moonshot Moment. And it's my understanding, after talking to them and the people in our house, so to speak, that Foundations is an excellent instructional tool. It's a supplement. It's one of the ingredients that we need, but it's not the sole ingredient. It's not the silver bullet. So we have to keep looking at ways to meet the needs of the students that still aren't reaching proficiency. We've had students that participated in Moonshot Academies. They've stayed after school. They've done different things, and they're still not proficient. So we have to keep looking at different ways for them to reach proficiency. We're looking at schools around the state that have had good results on reading, and so we're still, we're not just say, hey, we got Foundations, or hey, we've got the Moonshot Moment, we're good. We're still looking at what we need to do to get better and to reach the target. One of the things we're going to have to do is figure out what we're going to do when the SAT-10 goes away. The SAT-10 is the test that we use for third grade reading proficiency in-house. It's not what the state uses, but it is what we've been using to measure our progress, and the SAT-10 has 2 years left, and then it's not going to be offered anymore. But the company that makes it isn't going to offer it anymore. It's not like we can't buy it anymore. I mean, we can't buy it anymore. So that's one of the things that we're going to have to do is figure out what we can use to replace SAT-10. All right, moving on to the next goal, increase graduation rate. We have some early warning indicators, some at-risk indicators, and both of our high school, both of our comprehensive high schools are doing a really good job of monitoring that. I haven't had in-depth conversations with the charter high school about how they use the early warning system, but you know, the comprehensive high schools are doing a good job of using the data to develop lists, and you know, they know who's at risk. The question is, what are we going to do after that? So that kind of leads to the second bullet, develop a focus plan for individual subgroup graduation rate at all three high schools. You know, not just the two comprehensive high schools, but even the charter, to make sure that each of them has a plan for how they're going to raise or address the graduation rate in each subgroup. The African-American male population is the struggling population. We haven't been able to raise that graduation rate. And, you know, we need to target that group specifically, but all subgroups have to be targeted. Yes?
So, and what are you going to do specifically? Because, you know, by the time you identify them in high school, it's probably too late. So what is happening at the elementary level and at the middle school level to close that achievement gap with our African-American students in particular? Because, you know, when we've had this conversation before with the board, what the board corporate says is, well, they're all, we treat them all the same and they all are going to succeed because we're doing great stuff for all of them. But the reality is, when you look at them by subgroups, there are groups of students that we are not serving, and other school districts have, like Pinellas County, they recognize that they have a problem with their African American students, and they actually have a specific plan to address that, because, you know, equal and fair are not necessarily the same thing.
Right.
So is there anything, you know, I love looking at high school, but what can we do before high school, especially with the early warning system and the attendance initiatives, to start, you know, before it becomes a problem?
Right. So the first thing you look at in elementary and middle school is promotion rate. And after you examine the promotion rate, you know, you start to see where the gaps are, and you go to those schools and say, what are you doing to address this gap that you have in your promotion rate for this segment of your population, whether it's African-American males or Hispanic females or whatever. So, you know, that's not listed here, but it is something that we're doing. I met with both high school principals and their guidance directors yesterday on a plan to increase access for all the different minority subgroups to advanced coursework. You know, we've looked at the numbers from dual enrollment, AP, IB, and our numbers are not anywhere near where they should be, and it's really all subgroups. So we've already asked them to develop a plan of how they're going to increase that access and the numbers that are in there.
So you have to lower the standards.
No, sir. What you do typically, and I shared this with them yesterday and gave them the name of some people who've done this kind of work, is you take a look at the aptitude level of kids coming out of middle school, and you make sure that they're put in the right classes and then given the supports to succeed. We don't lower the rate, the bar. We just make sure that when we put kids in an AP class or an honors class, that then they're given the support that they can succeed. One of the programs that we've used here in the past that went away was AVID, and you know, it was a budget cut years ago. Talked to both the high school principals about whether they want to bring AVID back or not. They're going to do a little bit of research and see, is that something they want to bring back or not.
What is that?
It's advancement via individual determination. It's a program that really, you grab a kid coming out of 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and they get enrolled in AVID. So it's someone who develops some kind of college potential, but maybe their family hasn't been to college and that kind of thing. So they get a class in study skills, preparation, that kind of thing, and they have that class as an elective all the way through their high school career. And the teacher who teaches that class acts kind of like as a homeroom teacher for them, monitoring their... I mean, it's true. The AVID wouldn't tell you that. They have fancy names for it. Right, like home base.
Exactly.
And but they act kind of as a homeroom teacher for that kid, making sure that they're keeping up with their assignments and that kind of thing. But they also use that elective for a study hall, you know, where they get additional help and that kind of thing. So not only do you... So you take a kid who has potential that may not have enrolled in an honors or an AP or a dual enrollment class. You put them in that class, but now you've given them the support that they can be successful. You can do it without buying the AVID program, but you have to have people trained to do it. You have to build it into your master schedule and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a conversation we're having.
Dr. Rendell?
Yes, sir.
We talked a little bit about universal learning design. If that's something that we can do for a subpopulation, isn't it something we can look at for the entire population if it's something that works?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to if you think about the IB learner profile. The Sebastian River Middle School has decided that all students are going to be IB because the IB learner profile basically is a challenge to the students to perform at a high level. It has concepts or personality profiles or whatever, but basically if you find something that works for kids that are struggling in a certain area, if you apply it to all the kids, it should help all the kids.
Right. Can you explain briefly what universal learning design is, or is that just a concept, a way of working?
I can let Mr. Frost take a shot at it first.
Sure. Well, universal learning design is the idea that if you're working, let's say, with an ESE population, okay, we've always had these light switches that stick out from the wall. Well, those don't work for people who don't have fingers, so they built the rocker switch, whereas it makes it easy for everyone.
Oh, it's like teaching as if all kids are gifted or...
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, the idea that what's good for a subpopulation and makes it easier for them to absorb material is good for everyone.
So another concrete example is Cornell Notes. Years ago, a lot of middle schools across the country started implementing Cornell Notes in their ESE resource classes because it helped the kids organize their notes for their classes, for their mainstream classes. Most middle schools across the country started adopting Cornell Notes in all of their classes, including their advanced honors algebra, all of their classes. So that's something that was working for a subgroup that all of a sudden everybody said, well, that's actually a good thing, we should all do it. So we can identify some of those things and try and make sure we implement them across the board.
Quick question going back to Sebastian.
Yes.
Middle school becoming a total IB school. How does that play out when students from other areas in Sebastian go to high school and they want to be IB? Is the middle school preferenced those students and then they're at the bottom of the list?
No.
How does it affect, let's say, Gifford Middle or Storm Grove? Geographically, I'm not sure about Gifford, but I know Storm Grove. Would middle school get preference, Sebastian Middle, and then take up that IB population in high school and the students in Storm Grove?
No, I had a conversation with Todd Racine about that, and basically, if you enroll in IB at Sebastian River, you enroll in IB at Sebastian River. It almost doesn't matter where you come out of middle school. If you want to take the challenging curriculum, you can take the challenging curriculum. There aren't seats held for different... as long as there's seats in the class, whoever enrolls really just enrolls
so
first.
Fault. It says, okay.
No. In fact, what you'll find if the kid's taking advanced courses at Storm Grove or Gifford and they go to Sebastian River, they're going to be fine in the pre-IB classes that are going on. In fact, he's using AP as pre-IB. So, the kids that are coming from Gifford or Storm Grove are going to be just fine. That's a good question. The last bullet on an increase to graduation rates, the last strategy is something new. I think I've talked with some of you about this before. What I'd like to do about halfway through the year is reach out to the community and start to develop what's called a graduate profile. What do we want our students to know and be able to do when they graduate high school? I'm not sure if it's going to be a set of skills, if it's going to be a set of courses. And we know what the state of Florida asks, 24 credits. Certain number in a certain subject areas, have to pass a certain number of tests and that kind of thing. But if we were to say, what do we want a kid to know and be able to do when they graduate from a high school here in New River County, what do we want them to know and be able to do? Is it a skill set? Is it the ability to work as part of a team? Is it critical thinking? Is it creativity? What kinds of things are we going to want to target as our graduates could know and do, possess all those things? So I put that in there as a strategy to increase the graduation rate because some of the things that might come out of the discussion is to be, not everybody's going to go to college, so maybe it's going to be career ready. So what does career ready look like? And if we can have that discussion with some of the community members, maybe it's we start to build these bridges to employment right out of high school. You mentioned Wabasso earlier. Mrs. Francis and I have talked about, what kind of transition programs do we have for the kids when they leave Wabasso? And so, that's one example, but what about transition programs from a kid graduating from Sebastian River High that really doesn't want to go to college and wants to stay in the area and go to work right away? Have we prepared them with a career and technical ed certificate to go right into work in our community, or is it, here's your high school diploma, good luck? So, you know, I think it's going to impact our graduation rate. That's why I put it under in that area.
So what are you envisioning doing differently, because a very high percentage of our graduates already graduate with certificates? That's something that we always pride ourselves on. So what's going to be different about that?
So are those certificates the kind of occupation that we have in our community, that they're going to be able to go to work right away? Now, a lot of them do, because we have a lot of kids graduating with medical type certifications, CNA, phlebotomy, and all the medical transcriptionists, all those different things, which we need right here. But are there other things that maybe we don't have in place that we should? You know, we have automotive technology, but is that leading to a certification, and is that certification leading to employment? You know, so we need to examine all of that and make sure that, you know, if we have a need, we don't have a big factory in town, we don't have big industry in town, but if there was something that, besides healthcare, because we seem to be meeting that need, you know, what else is there?
Aquaculture.
Hotel restaurant management is something we've been talking about a little bit, which we're starting to do a little research on, because that seems to be a focus of our community, hotels and restaurants and tourism. And so,
including in gaming?
There's already, we'll follow that grow from eighth grade up. So that's already kind of on the list. High tech stuff like that.
Why don't you wait until after the first of the year to get that community input? We're going to have graduates this year.
Right. Well, I thought we were going to get the year underway and do some other stuff first. So
that's a good answer.
Right.
It would be really nice if we could partner with the County Commission. And, you know, they have economic development grants. I know the City of Sebastian, if you have so many new jobs created,
right,
the city itself would give a return. I know they did it for Enos. Was that Enos or things mm-hmm. like that? So, too bad that was probably a bad example, but the county did offer that. Too bad the county, I mean, there's a little island called Block Island in Rhode Island that they pay for the people born and raised there, they pay for their college tuition as long as they return to
right.
Block Island. And, you know, obviously it would be great if providing jobs career ready, that the county commission along with couldn't offer the businesses some economic grant for hiring a local graduate of our schools. But that's something we could probably politically discuss when we run into them. But I just thought that would be a great idea to foster a relationship with the community and
right.
the businesses of the community, and then have the county commission in turn make it lucrative for them.
Well, I mean, that's definitely one of the groups we'll be talking to when we go out.
And I do sit on the Economic Development Commission, and they just got rid of the Economic Development Zone that was
right.
defunded by the state, and they're looking at different alternatives locally. So one of the things that did come up was a stronger partnership with the school district and a track. You know,
right.
I hate to use that word, but that's, you know, a path forward, if
sure.
you will, where a student develops so that, you know, they can work on their AMP and maybe get a job at one of the aviation places around the airport. But making sure that we have, you know, students trained for the jobs that are available in the area
right.
is a brilliant, you know, it's sort of a natural thing. That
well, you know, we're going to do a little bit of work on marine mechanics. There's a marine mechanics program, career and tech ed program. There's one high school in Brevard that has it. Every kid that graduates with a marine mechanics certificate goes to work right away, because there's all kinds of boats out there that need to be, their engines need to be repaired. Never mind all the jet skis and all that. So, mm-hmm. All right, the bottom part of the box is measurable outcomes. And so for each of the different focus areas, I've put down some measurable outcomes. For this one, for the first one on student achievement, we're flying blind a little bit. We don't really have any data on the FSA. Even the data they did give us on science grades 5 and 8 FCAT and biology, they said, was still preliminary data, because they still need to match students and that kind of thing. It's not necessarily the numbers we would get towards school grades and that kind of thing. So what I've done is made some statements based on past practice. If we're looking to move, what kind of movement can we look for? So the first bullet under goal one, increase achievement scores in all standardized assessments. The measurable outcome would be an improvement of at least one letter grade for each school in the state accountability model. Now, keep in mind, this would be for 15-16, so we don't even have the grades for 14-15 yet. So I don't really know what I'm putting out there, but I figured we might as well shoot for that. Meter exceeds state average in all standardized assessments. We're kind of middle of the road, and some of the assessments were above state average, and some of the assessments were below. So meet or exceed state average in all standardized assessments seemed like a good way to start. You know, if we get the data back from the FSA and we're above the state average in all standardized assessments for 14-15, we might need to readjust that because we might already be above. But you know, that's based on information that I don't have. That's what I put down. For goal two, it's all tied to the moonshot moment right now. We need to increase the number of students proficient in grade three by 5% based on the state assessment and 5% based on SAT 10. We can measure that this year. We still have SAT 10 for this year. We should have growth for 15-16 if we use the FSA from 14-15. So, but we won't know. The reason I put two types of assessments there is we'll have the SAT 10 data at the end of the year. We administer that. We have that data. The state will do the FSA. We'll get 14-15 data sometime soon, and I don't know when we'll get 15-16 data. So I put two different measures there. The bottom ones increase the graduation rate overall by 2 percentage points based on state data. That may not sound like a lot, but when you're moving from 80 to 82 or 81 to 83.5, that's actually a big jump. So 2 percentage points is actually aggressive. Increase in minority subgroup graduation rate by 5 percentage points based on state data. And again, that's what we get back from the state. We haven't got 14-15 data back yet. But based on our past performances, our minority subgroups are lower than our white subgroups. And so setting them at 5 percentage points, I think, it's an aggressive goal. Hispanic male students the past few years at Sebastian River have actually had high increase. So could shoot ourselves in the foot by setting that high percentage points there, but we'll see. So that's all I have for focus area one so far.
So I just have a question around, you know, because with this change in leadership and focus and vision and, you know, some things that we're maintaining, it seems that it's going to be challenging to have a baseline for your academics. However, there are, for example, for your graduation rate, it would be, even though that too has changed the way it was calculated, it would be helpful to have an ongoing document that shows the trends so that you're mindful of where you've been and where you're going, and you look at not just your overall graduation, but you look at your subgroups by high school so you can really drill down and figure out specifically where you need to improve instruction or you need to tackle an issue. And then alongside that, other factors that impact achievement, such as attendance, what are the attendance rates per school, and some of that data where it's like, you know, what is it, 10, there's some number that is the critical number. You know, there's data that is not available to the board or to the public to actually see if we're making a difference. The same thing with suspensions, referrals, and expulsions. What is the baseline? What do we have right now? Not about judgment, just what is that data? And if we are engaging kids more through effective instruction, they're going to be in school. If there's training for teachers on multicultural competency, we're going to see some differences in the way some of our minority students are treated. If we are doing, you know, restorative justice, if we're looking at our in-school suspension, if we're improving school climate, over time, those numbers are going to change. And once those numbers are identified and we had the conversation about referrals, we could dig deeper and understand maybe sometimes it's good to have high referrals.
Right.
You know what I mean? But without having baseline data, it's very difficult to then, you know, evaluate if what we're doing is working or not.
So what I need to do is share with you all what baseline data we already have.
Yes.
So this was something we were going to talk about later, but I can get you copies of this. When I met with each principal over the summer, we looked at this, which is it's a data dashboard of their school based on information that accountability assessment pulled together for me for each school. So this kind of stuff is what I want to have live eventually. But right now, so it has the school, their demographic data, their percent of their overall population, their percent of different subgroups, percent of ESE, percent of free and reduced lunch. And it has the last 2 years of performance data, basically a TEFCAT data because we don't have FSA yet. And there's attendance rates, there's suspension and other discipline referral rates and all that kind of stuff. So we kind of have this for every school, and what you're saying is you'd like to see it. And, okay, I can do that.
Can I ask, did you pull that together?
And I had accountability and assessment to it.
You had somebody do it for you.
Right.
But it's pretty easy.
But I gave them a list of what I want.
Kudos.
Right. It's just, well, okay.
And thank you.
But, then the other thing we did was we looked at their parent and student and staff climate survey results. Top three, bottom three,
that
kind of thing. So
finally,
this is the kind of stuff that we're talking about when we go look at schools. But we can do one of these for each school and give you guys a copy. We can put them on the website. There's nothing to hide. So we can do that. I didn't know there was a need for that.
Well, you know, I think the beauty of it is that we're not creating work for anyone, because usually when we ask for information, you're creating work for someone, but this is work that is already being generated because it's going to make a difference in student achievement,
right?
And therefore, it's logical that it be available to stakeholders.
Right. Right. So,
thank you.
So, also, I'm kind of getting when we go to the final version of this, rather than say 5 points, 3 points, 3 percentage points, whatever. If I could say from 87 to 90, mm-hmm. from 90 to 92. Where we have current data, we'll put that in there. But we don't have any current data.
Dr. LaCava used to do that. He used to get classes with it. And
yeah.
You do the previous year, this year, and next year, and you're kind of running.
Yes, as soon as we get it, you know, which I've heard November or December, but okay. As soon as we get it. Yep, yeah, sure.
You have hit the ground running.
Yes.
All right, so are we ready to move to Area 2? Safety and security. Usually when we respond to an emergency crisis, we say student safety is our number one priority. But I made it number two since student achievement is our number one priority. This one is really kind of brief. It's something that I wanted to make sure it was a focus area, though, because we still spend time, energy, effort, and money on this. So the first one, ensure the physical safety and security of all students and staff. We already have... You know, we have inspectors on our payroll who go out and check to make sure that there are no physical safety concerns. Safety and security, they're two different things. So safety would be, you know, are there potholes? Are there uneven sidewalks where people could trip? That kind of thing. Is the lighting adequate? That's what safety is. Security is different. Security is, have we secured the perimeter of the building? Is there a single entry point into the building? That kind of thing. So we have people going out and addressing all those things right now. The third bullet in goal one is to pursue the addition of another school resource officer at each comprehensive high school. I didn't really realize this until the other day when I was on one of the campuses and I was talking with the high school principals. In St. Lucie County, each high school has two resource officers because they draw from the county and the city. So they're in partnership with the sheriff's department to have a deputy there on campus, but then they're also in partnership with their local municipality, either Fort Pierce Police or Port St. Lucie, City of Port St. Lucie Police, to have a second resource officer on campus. So I've already started some discussions with Adele and some of the other people about that. So that's just something that I'm going to pursue. Notice I said pursue the addition of another school resource officer. So, you know, on the board's direction about that, we'll find out how much that would cost, you know, whether it's going to be worth it, all that kind of stuff.
There is a COPS grant right now you got to look at, you have to have Carter. And I have always wanted, not the elementary, not the middle school, and it's not for I got you, you're violating, you're smoking on grounds or anything like that, but just this year, Sebastian alone had a very serious incident with one resource officer and grown physically men, and we don't want our other children, the collateral damage, the child, you know, getting hurt. We don't want our teachers having to break up fights and getting hurt. I've had so many people from the public say, well, you just call in and backups like that. I could tell you, the zones, there's only like three off four officers, North County, three South. The time you get, I mean, it's not for me to tell them how to patrol, but they should patrol as a dual,
right?
Because then they're safe. But that's their business once they're hired and working. But I do feel, for the longest time, the amount of, I mean, you learn more from a bag boy at Publix about all the fights and all the unsafe issues, and it's strictly for the safety of the children and the teachers and the collateral issues. And also an officer there doing his job. But also, if you haven't read the guy that was going to put a gun on Captain Hiram's recently, then there's the outside intrusion. So I would be very much, and I know, and it's coming up now, but it would have to, that there's a COPS grant where it would pay half the salary. So that's a timely issue, too, if that's something that we wanted.
Yeah, I think security of our students and our staff is of utmost priority. However, you know, there have been studies that show that when you have more SROs on campus, you have more arrests of students, because a lot of times principals just let everything go to the SRO. So I could support something like that if there is adequate training, so the principals are the site leaders, and they don't just leave it to the SROs. And then the SROs need trainings. I saw a video of a fight last year in one of our high schools where the kids were breaking up the fight and the SRO was like somewhere in a corner. And so that, you know, I understand the safety issue, but I do think that, you know, our kids aren't all bad. Our kids aren't all hoodlums. And I think that, you know, there is that balance that needs to be had, because when you have SROs on campus, you just have that much more arresting of students, and that's not good for anyone. And but I know that safety is important, and my question is, you know, how do we balance it? Because there needs to be a balance.
And that's what I get from the community, because of people saying it's the I got you and the that, and I can't, and you're right. Just like you could have a teacher that is not behaving well, and you're not going to shame all teachers or shame all, you know. So I understand that, and I would understand that as well. And I would also say that would be if you had three SROs. But when you have one SRO with no backup, officers do not go to a domestic by themselves. Know what? They do not go running in by themselves. You know, I mean, it's just not smart for themselves or for the incident at hand, for the safety. So that's what I'm just saying, we could pretend we're a bedroom community and it doesn't happen, but it is. And as a parent or as people with grandparents, you know, I don't want somebody, I got you, in another arrest, but I would put safety of those children who are innocent over, it's another arrest. If that's happening, that needs to be corrected. But I don't want that to take away from not getting the safety to begin with. So I totally agree with you. And I think that is a concern, that is an awareness. And if they're not behaving right, the school resource officers, and I understand, and you don't want the principal to go, I ain't handling this little back-talk sassy stuff because I got an SRO on this. We don't want that. And I'm just being street like that. But, you know, I'm just saying that's not the purpose of the SRO. I totally agree. And having a principal. But I could be wrong, but I don't think Todd Racine is like that. And I don't think that Sean O'Keefe is like that, but I'm sure that wouldn't be a conversation that couldn't be had.
Right. Actually, when I talked to Liddell about it yesterday, we were talking about the fact that what the role of the SRO is and, you know, how that can best be utilized. And part of it's one of the reasons we got SROs years and years and years ago was to improve relationships between our students and law enforcement. For young people to understand that law enforcement, you know, is there to support them, not just to arrest them, kind of thing. So developing that relationship, but the other part of it is just their physical presence on campus. You know, is it, you know, they're part of the landscape on campus, and, you know, that kind of thing. And it, you know, with the fact that you've got two campuses really at Vero Beach High, and you kind of have two campuses now at Sebastian River High, it's kind of, you know, physically it would be better to have two SROs there.
And I do want to say, having worked with law enforcement agencies for 29 years, just like teaching, there are some people there that should not be law enforcement officers, just like there are some people in teaching that should not be. And I would hope, like, and I'll use Denny Hart as an example. Denny Hart was so excited that he would be in the position where he could tell people from his own experience that he can turn your life around. And I would hope that a school officer would use that position while just monitoring and being there, using that as a mentoring. I mean, those are great opportunities as mentoring. I mean, you look like a nice kid. you know, just some really good mentoring, I would hope. And if it's not the right fit, then I don't want that school. I don't want that school resource officer in our school either, because it, you know, it's there to protect the safety. I feel, but that's the objective. And then if there was any byproduct, like good stuff, like mentoring and things like that. If there's bad byproducts, that, I don't want that guy or girl in
right.
our school.
And I think you'd want to do like the restorative justice training, because you know a lot of times it's the perceptions and the stereotypes that people have about children and about certain children. And as long as those stereotypes persist when they interact with these kids, they don't give them the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes, you know, people don't look at the triggers. You know, when I was teaching, I had a student that was being bullied by other students. They stuck him in a locker and left him there, and nobody did anything. And when that kid finally had a chance, he fought back. He got suspended, and they got suspended. And, you know, and it's some of these, you know, there are exceptions and whatnot, but I think that, you know, the training is crucial.
We're getting,
because I have a hard time
bogged down here in one item.
Pursue it.
Okay. Got it.
Get the information. Okay. Bring it back. We can have all these discussions later.
All right, the second goal is about how the students feel on campus, how they feel, whether they feel safe and secure. We're going to review all the bullying and harassment policies and training modules. We want to make sure that they're effective. The new code of conduct should make a difference. We have positive behavior support programs in a couple of different schools. We have restorative justice in two middle schools. Kids at Hope going in at least one elementary school and one alternative school. The National Gallup student poll is something that I want to use this year. It's a free poll for us to participate in. It's online. Only takes about 20 minutes for the kids to complete. I was going to do it in grades 5, 8, and 10. It yields a lot of good data about engagement. They call the term well-being, but it's how kids feel safe at school or not, and whether they feel like they're learning what they need to know to get to where they want to be in life, and they call that module hope. So we're going to use that. It's in October, late October, early November, and it's going to provide us with some good data. The last three bullets in goal three about ensure effectiveness of emergency response measures, just to make sure we're doing all the things we're supposed to be doing by policy and statute, conducting all the fire drills we're supposed to conduct, making sure that we have good hurricane preparedness manual and hazardous awareness. One of the things we did in St. Lucie several years ago, and we did each year after that, is we had one district-wide emergency drill. And so all the schools were involved, and we conduct, like, if we had a tornado touchdown somewhere, how would we respond and all that kind of thing. Because we find that if we don't drill that, then if it were to happen, we're not prepared. And it was a result of 4 years ago, I think it was, we had that huge rainstorm that flooded St. Lucie County, and the roads were flooded, and it was in the middle of the school day, and we didn't respond very well because we weren't ready. So then we learned how to be ready.
That storm was in the Gulf at the same time.
It was September. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
There was a storm in the Gulf. It was nowhere near us. So we had school that day.
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, but there was this tail end of this.
That's
storm.
The one. Yeah,
decided
that's
to
the
ride
one.
Up the East Marble Coast.
Right.
And so everybody's saying, "What are these idiots having school for?" Well,
right.
All the emergency managers people are saying it's clear, yeah. It's so far away, it's not going to bother us. And all of a sudden, oops.
At the time, that was when the charter was still in the module building.
Yeah.
All module buildings were being evacuated to big buildings, and that's all charter junior high had,
yeah,
so
yeah.
That was scary.
All right, so the measurable outcomes at the bottom for focus area three, the school safety reports, if we decide to add the school resource officers, that's a measurable outcome. Decrease the number of disciplinary referrals and suspensions by 5%. The principals have already received that, especially at the schools where that's a focus. We're going to use feedback from the climate survey and the Gallup student poll, and then all the different drills, the responses from the different drills. Anything else on focus area two? All right, focus area three is employee development, how we improve the effectiveness of the people that we have and how we recruit and retain. Highly effective people. So the first, provide a unified, comprehensive professional development plan. One of the messages that we sent out last week at the summit was that all of our PD, all of our training is supposed to be on improving instruction. So I mentioned earlier the standards-based instruction, the instructional rounds, all that collaborative planning worked all about improving instruction. We're going to conduct a mid-year assessment of PD. It's going to be based on all the feedback we get. Every time we deliver a PD, the participants do a feedback form. So we're going to collate all that, and halfway through the year, we're going to do a survey based on that information to everybody that's participated in PD to see whether it's effective or not. So that's going to be based on mid-year results. The third bullet there is something that we can measure, I guess, but really last year what I saw when I reviewed the PD calendar was we had people out of classroom way too much. We had teachers that were participating in PD. Good PD, good training for them, but they were away from their students. And so the best substitute you have is still not a classroom teacher, you know, that's teaching the material. So we have to find ways to deliver the training without impacting instructional time. We only have three earful sessions during the school year this year. The fourth one's in June, so that doesn't impact instruction. That saves us 2 days of instruction that we lost last year. A lot of the other instruction, or PD, I'm just telling them they have to do it on the afternoons and weekends. So we're just pushing the stuff off the school day, so we don't do that. The next goal, implement employee performance systems focused in improvement. We need to make sure that the leadership staff, instruction, and the teachers and the assistant principals and principals are using the evaluation protocol properly. You know, we have the Marzano framework that everybody doesn't seem to like, but it's actually a really, really good diagnostic tool if you use it appropriately. So we're just going to keep working on training that and making sure we understand how to use that properly. Non-instructional staff and supervisors in the proper use of the evaluation protocol. What I've already found is that I've had some grievances come my way or from last year and that kind of thing, and we weren't doing the things we were supposed to be doing. We weren't crossing our I's and dotting our I's and crossing our T's. So I think we were crossing our I's and dotting our T's, yeah. So it's just holding people accountable to what they're supposed to be doing. The mid-year assessment of evaluation results and improvement plans, this is something that if we have good, valuable data, we'll be able to say, okay, we've been at this for 6 months. You know, what do we see? So, you know, I can't show you exactly what that's going to look like yet because I don't know. Goal three is really working conditions. You know, we say this all the time, establish competitive salary schedules and compensation levels, seek to mitigate increases in healthcare and other benefit costs, but we're going to do that. We are going to focus on that. And then continue to focus our recruitment efforts towards critical need areas. When we say critical need area, I'm almost always thinking subject matter or certification. Math teachers, science teachers, lately it's been English teachers that we can't find. But for us, it's actually ethnic groups. You know, we need to make sure that we're going out and finding teachers that represent the population that we serve. So, you know, our teaching staff needs to be as diverse as our student population. So we need to, you know, we've been recruiting in those areas, but we still need to continue that. The measurable outcomes are all there. You might notice that the analysis of teacher instructional practice score, so that's their score on their Marzano instrument, is in two places. In goal one, in parentheses, I put areas of rating. If we're showing them how to be better teachers, if we're showing them how to do standards-based instruction and collaboratively plan and use formative assessments, their ratings are going to show up in different areas on the instrument. There are certain indicators, certain areas of the tool that maybe we haven't been hitting as hard as we should. So if we do things right, those areas will be hit more. You see it show up in goal two, analysis of teacher instructional practice score, level of performance. So now we're going to be rating different things, but we want to be rating them and the things we used to rate more accurately. You know, I'd like to say higher, but we need to make sure we're rating them more accurately. Might be higher, but probably not. Already talked about the professional training feedback forms, review of the improvement plans, employee hiring retention rates, efforts of the recruitment efforts. So, the last bullet, we'll know if we've been successful in recruiting critical need areas or not.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. You know, in the news, they've been talking about the teacher shortages in states like California where they're desperate for teachers. I'm looking at tonight's agenda and the hirings. It seems like Indian River County is having issues.
We're not in a critical stage like a lot of other areas, but we still have openings. In fact, one of the things we were going to ask you all is if there is a way we could have a special board meeting on the afternoon of August 21st. Just to hire anybody to officially appoint anybody we've hired the Friday before school starts. So, because we added a bunch to tonight's agenda, actually, and so we'll have even more by next Friday. We can make it whatever time it needs to be, but we'll get to that.
Dr. Rendell,
I
appreciate you really narrowing down on the data points we'd like to capture, and I know that this is a first pass. Would you be comfortable putting some more numbers around these once we have our baseline, such as employee hire and retention rates, if we currently know what retention rates are?
Sure.
Retain, you know, 5 or 10% more, or things along those lines, and also specifically results of and recruitment efforts.
Yep.
If we know we're at
12%,
African American, get to 15.
I was thinking.
Or show the efforts. You know, I know Dr. Fritz went to a lot of HBCs recruiting last time around, so hopefully we can at least show those efforts this time around.
The big problem is with teachers, it's the same thing I've got when we go out and we need a new staff accountant. We're going to get some young kid right out of college. Well, you know, when I worked at a big firm, I used to send me to college campuses to recruit. It's great fun. Problem is, you go to a college campus, and when you're on a college campus looking at a whole bunch of new retainees, or new graduates, thank you. You know, you can say, okay, I want, you know, pick and choose what you want them to look like, smell like, you know, what color hair.
GPA, all of that.
Problem is, none of those kids come back. None of those, well, that's true, but none of those kids come back to Vero Beach.
Right.
We never could get one college graduate who wasn't from here to come back here. Not a one. I worked at the biggest firm in town. We could not get one college graduate who wasn't from here to come back here. And we have the same problem here. Somebody graduated from Vero, wants to come move back to Vero. Yeah, you can get those kids. Kids coming out of college, I don't care who you are, what profession you're in, you're going to gravitate towards the Tampas and Orlandos, especially if you're single, and have fun for a few years, and then, you know, okay.
But, you know, the courts want us for the DSEG order.
That's interesting.
You know, that is true, but we need to be documenting that because, you know, the DSEG order has a lot of, if you make that good faith effort and you document it, and that's the piece, I think, that you're kind of getting at, especially as we consider revisiting the DSEG.
Yeah, my only point was that in a small community, it's hard to go to a college campus and recruit somebody to come here.
But I think that we should be able to demonstrate that we offered a position.
Right.
You know, we extended an offer of employment to this many. You know, we can't make them move here. You know, obviously, that's a bad idea. But
even though we say teach by the beach,
or on the beach, by the beach, prepositions.
Right.
All right. I'm sorry.
It's a recruiting tool, but yeah.
Okay. But you would be more comfortable wrapping some.
Oh, I can put. Yeah, we can put numbers there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, just for your information. Last year when we were working on this in St. Lucie's retention rate was about 80%, and that's the national average retention rate for teachers is 80%. And we did compare neighboring districts, and I believe Indian River was 93%, which is pretty good.
That is good.
So I'll have to find out if that's accurate. So to remember that. All right, focus area 4, I chose school community relations.
To make you try harder.
I think that I got it straight from Dr. Fritz, I believe. So I'll have to hold him accountable to that now. So, focus area 4, school community relations. The first goal is to increase communication between schools and the community. I really think we need to revamp the district webpage and then start to use social media more to communicate. I do have a Twitter handle, and I've been tweeting different stuff. So it's capital IRS. Indian River Super, so it's IR and then it's UPER 1. So it's capital IRS, small UPER 1, because IRS UPER was already taken. So IRS Super 1.
Oh.
And tweeted about the summit. Anytime I find a good education article on the web, I tweet about it and that kind of thing. So, but, you know, we need to take advantage of social media and use it to our advantage. I believe I asked somebody if I could do that.
You
for forgiveness.
So it's fine.
I think I asked Bruce if I could do that.
Do you have Periscope? Do you Periscope?
No, I haven't got that far yet.
That's good. It's live video streaming through Twitter. You could have your coffee with the superintendent all virtually.
I probably need to go out there. So, and that comes up actually somewhere else in here. It's the next bullet, actually. Maintain effective communication tools such as the superintendent's coffee and Friday update. The facilities department did want to know whether you guys do value the facility updates on Friday afternoons, whether you want those to continue weekly or biweekly or...
Just a Friday update.
Right.
I think biweekly would be enough for me. You know,
for the construction updates.
Scott and
see, they run out every Friday and take pictures and stuff.
Yeah, I don't.
That seems like make work for a newsletter.
I thought the way they were doing it with when, how many times do we get the one that's attached to the board agenda? Like the facilities update that's attached and available to the public.
We could do that.
And then
instead,
in the Friday updates, if there's anything relevant that we need to know, they can just write a sentence or two. But, you know, to go take pictures unless they're there, you don't want to.
I think they did a great job. I think they need to be a little more, you know, summary type and just really, we're on time, no rain issues. This is where we're at.
Okay.
I mean, they've done a really great job, but it's like, oh, that's great. But, you know, there's a lot of, that's time they could use spending something out, you know.
Right. So every other week would be enough for you?
That's or on the attached to the board agenda seems like a better way to do it.
Yeah,
and I don't
like
know
it.
How, many, how often does that happen? Is that just once a month?
Once a month, the last meeting or the second meeting.
Okay, we'll just do that. Okay.
Very nice.
The third bullet there is to pursue the reinstatement of a PIO, a public information officer. That was a budget cut several years ago. The budget's not, we don't have like a lot of money or anything like that, but we are being inundated with public records requests. The press, they don't do reporting anymore. What they do is tell us what information they want and make us get it and give it to them. And we charge them for it.
But I'm envisioning this position would also feed all the good news.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Tell
correct.
Stories.
Tell
correct.
Or stories that just not aren't going out there, like
right.
teachers on working on the rover and, you know, things like that, that are you know, are the things that we should tout, because you need 10 of those
for
one bad story.
Right.
So I don't think our good news is getting out there.
Correct.
As well.
Right. The goal of the PIO, Public Information Officer, would be to tell all the good news. Would be
absolutely.
To get out there out front and put out publications and use the social media to put out pictures and things that of good stuff going on in our schools and that kind of thing. So,
and engagement with the community.
Yeah, to be out all the time doing things like that and responding to requests and stuff like that. So, you know, right now Peggy writes our press releases.
Scared me there for a minute.
Yeah. No. Peggy writes our press releases and among the 100 other things she does. And so so I guess what I'm actually looking for is a little bit of guidance as to whether we should pursue that.
Yeah, I think that was something we've been talking about for a while.
You know, and I think, I don't know if anybody saw that, there was a great TED Talk about the importance of nonprofits investing in public relations and this type of work. And a lot of times the perception is that why are you using my money instead of going directly to the clients? But there has to be a balance, because if you don't get the word out about who you are and the good work that you're doing, you're not going to get the clients. And in our case, as a school district, if we don't tell our story, there's so much negativity. And Peggy can't do it all on her own. So we've been having
that. Well, the first thing that we'll do is come up with a job description and bring it back.
And here's a prime example. I've had so many people in the community say, when are we going to get career certificates. We don't have those career. What am I trying to say?
Technical career.
We don't have those in Indian River anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, we do.
No,
we don't have them at the Vero Beach High School. Yeah, you do.
I'm not going to say who it was, but he sits on the county commission. Last week, sat down with me and asked me why we don't have those. And I, you know, that's.
Sometimes it is willfully.
Well, sometimes it is, but in this case, I mean, you know, I had with me all the examples, so I think that getting our message out there is important. And as far as a new website that's useful and that we can put those dashboards on and that people can actually find things, and I think that's outstanding.
Yeah, we had a county commissioner say during a meeting we were operating a for-profit car wash, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so moving on. Goal number two, maintain and improve working relationship with the community. The first bullet, examine and assess the possibility of achieving unitary status. This is something that you directed me to do last time, so we're going to start the process of that. Set up some meetings with all the stakeholders and a board workshop and that kind of thing. So we're going to work towards that. The next bullet, continue partnerships with organizations such as United Way, American Cancer Society, Ed Foundation, Learning Alliance, seek out new partnerships to benefit schools. So really just make sure we continue what we're doing with these different things. The next one is new, implement, I'm going to call it Casual for a Cause campaign. The last Thursday of the month, each of the month that we're in school, we're going to identify a organization or a charity, and everybody at a school or in an organization like the district office, transportation, can pay a nominal fee to dress down for the day. The students at the elementary schools could, you know, not wear their uniforms for the day, wear T-shirts or whatever. Middle school, that like Storm Grove, that has a dress code, same sort of thing. So it's kind of like Dollars for Denim, but most schools already do that on Fridays, so I don't want to infringe upon that, but we do it like the last Thursday of the month. We do it district-wide, and all the money that's collected that day would go towards that organization or that charity. But more importantly than collecting the money and giving it to a charity is that whole month we'll educate everybody about that organization or charity. So, for example, October is typically Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so we'll make that the American Cancer Society month. So on that Thursday, all the money generated goes towards American Cancer Society. But during the weeks leading up to that, we'll send out information to share with students and staff about what the American Cancer Society is, what it does, that kind of thing. Same thing, January, I think, or February. February, I think, would be the month we do American Heart Association, because that's usually when they do jump rope for heart, but or hoops for heart, that kind of thing. But our schools, all of our schools participate in it.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's a time, so we say, okay, that's going to be their month. We educate everybody about what they do. And then one day on during that month, hopefully the last Thursday of the month, we do some kind of fundraising at each school. So I've already talked to the principals about it. They're excited about it. They think it'll be great. One of the things that some of you have heard me say is I cannot believe how much community support we have for our schools. So this, to me, is a way that our schools can then turn around and pay some of that back. So once a month, you know, by highlighting a certain organization, charity, cause, whatever we want to call it, and then all the money goes towards that charity or cause.
So instead of the last Thursday, if you did it the fourth Tuesday, I could be wearing T-shirts and flip-flops to the board meeting.
That's the directive of the board. Got to get two more votes.
So we're not.
Waste down.
I agree with Mr. McCain.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Consensus. That's right.
Could there be any unintended consequences? I mean, you do that on Fridays already, so there are no issues with kids wearing inappropriate.
The two high school principals and I had a lengthy conversation about where they would draw the line. So there's still going to be some guidance. Correct. In fact, they already don't have a very. They don't have uniforms, so they're going to decide whether they're going to allow them to wear hats or whether they're going to allow them to wear tank tops or whatever. You know, there's going to be a specific, with them it's going to be a specific, this is what you get if you pay the dollar or whatever. So
you should get dressed up.
Exactly.
We get to wear a suit. We talked about that.
Wear a tie.
I think kids really are looking for that.
They did that at the middle schools, and the kids really liked it.
So, all right, if we could move to goal three, improve relationship with the charter schools. The three bullets there don't cost us any money. Develop consistent communication with the pattern with the charter school organization. I've been to, there's a meeting of the charter school heads. I've been to that twice already. I'll figure out, you know, how I can go to that on a more consistent basis. We've already included the principals in the principals meeting last week. I've gone out and visited all the charter schools, that kind of thing. So the charter school liaison, that person's going to be at the table, so to speak, for district-level decision-making. Those are things we can do that really answer some of the calls that they asked. Some of the things that they asked could change. And you know, these aren't things that cost us any money.
I don't want to take away from the existing liaison, but that was a sentiment that was brought up at that meeting, and I'm sure that person wouldn't mind not being the liaison anymore. Is there any thought into changing? I mean, I think complacency in anything happens in government and schools, and it might be just time to change that person. Anyway,
right.
Have you given it some thought?
We have.
Yeah.
Preferably someone at the cabinet level?
We have.
Okay.
But I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
We haven't made a complete final decision, but yeah. Then the measurable outcomes for Area 4 there, the first, a new and improved web page and increased use of social media. If we decide to add a PIO, that would be there. The result of the move towards, you know, the assessment of the move toward unitary status. Donations generated from the Cause for a Campaign, Casual for a Cause campaign. Yeah, what we want to do at the end of the year is have an account, have the charter school liaison kind of do a summary of what they accomplished during the year kind of thing, and then the increased presence of charter school personnel at district events. Those are measurables.
Is there, I remember during the interview process, you had some instrument that you used as far as satisfaction, teacher satisfaction or administrator satisfaction or something along those lines. Is there some way to maybe work that into the charter relationship as far as, like, you know, like they do in healthcare, they have the... the relationship is. I think both sides of whatever is occurring should address that. Also, addition of a PIO. Actually, used to work in this field, and one of the ways we rated our PIO wasn't public information. They were a media relations person. Was number of articles placed or number of hits or things along those lines. Would it be? I mean, I know we don't have this yet, but I guess maybe we could think about having that as a metric in the future.
We can change from the addition of a PIO to evaluation of the effectiveness of the PIO. And then we have to evaluate.
And then come up with some, you know, whether it's five positive stories or, you know, one of those things. I know this is, first pass.
Okay, so focus area 5, we should be able to run through this one pretty quickly. Technology integration. I actually believe that this was important enough to have its own focus area. So three different ways to use technology. One is an instructional tool. Two is a curriculum management system. And then three is a student management system, which really is data. So the first one at the top, increase the number of and use of digital assessments in the classroom. We have the ability to take many assessments in the classroom using digital tools. You can use your BYOD devices. You can have students fill out a Scantron sheet and then put it under your overhead, your Elmo or whatever they call these days. And there's different ways we can use technology to get access to information right away about how students perform on assessments. So we need to encourage our teachers to do that and show them how to do it. You know, you can use the clickers. You know, Bruce's guys are starting to talk more to the curriculum guys, and we're starting to see, you know, how we can do that better. That really leads us to the second bullet, provide on-site support to teachers who are utilizing technology as an instructional tool in the classroom. You may have caught on some job description changes a couple of board meetings back. We now have some personnel that their entire job, it's a teaching unit, it's an instructional unit, but their entire job is to be based at the school helping teachers use technology in their classroom. There's one at Vero Beach High School, there's one at Sebastian River High School, and then there's one that services all four middle schools. The teachers who have those digital one-to-one classrooms, there's 114 teachers that have laptop carts in their classrooms, and they're being trained on how to use those laptop carts, those computers, as tools for instruction, but they need support throughout the year. And so now there's one at each high school and one that travels to the four middle schools. That just really works with those teachers to use that technology in the classroom. They're not Mr. or Ms. Fix-It. They're not supposed to fix it. They can, but they're really there to help them use the instruction. So, you know, we've actually put that in place. So we'll have to, you know, see how they rate their effectiveness at the end of the year. Yeah.
So are those two the positions on the agenda for tonight for the technology services application support specialists?
Those are them.
And those are the ones that are going to the middle school?
Names?
There's no Felix, Reyes, and Carrie Wall.
They're both high school.
So they're high school.
Yep. Yep. All right. Then also to explore the true costs of the costs and benefits, a cost-benefit analysis of a true one-to-one initiative. Our one-to-ones right now are these classroom set of laptops where, you know, so a kid walks in a room and every one student has a laptop. But in the world outside of Indian River County, most of the time if you use the term one-to-one, it's where the kid gets the computer and gets to keep it, takes it home and all that kind of thing. So Bruce and I are going to do some research this year on whether that's what the costs are associated with that and then what the benefits are associated with that. And, you know, bring to you guys at some point during the year kind of a cost-benefit analysis, whether that's something we want to pursue. A lot of districts have done that and seen good results, but just as many districts have done that and not seen positive results. So if they have access to the technology while they're in the room, is that enough? Or do they need to have access to the technology when they go home? If they have the piece of technology with them, but they don't have access to the internet, is the piece of technology useful? That kind of stuff. So we just want to take a look at whether that's work up a cost-benefit analysis.
Has anyone looked into like using e-readers, or I don't want to use a brand name, but a low-cost reader as far as online, that they're down under $100 now?
Yeah.
Where that piece maybe goes home, because obviously, it seems as though whenever my child has something they have to do at home on the computer, it's
right.
Reading the textbooks, which now has to be half the digital material. I just wonder if anyone has looked into that.
Bruce and I will talk about that. We'll look at that most of the time when we because we do have those School of Innovation grants available to schools again this year. And one of the things we've done is package a few of those e-readers as classroom sets.
Okay.
We've talked to different providers, and so in our mind, we were thinking these would be classroom sets that stay in the room, or stay at school, and mm-hmm. teachers pass them around. So,
well, I'm just thinking rather than a $2,000 laptop going home, a $100 e-reader might
right.
be more palatable.
Yeah. Okay. The next two are kind of how we use the technology here at the district office, so to speak, or how the teachers use it, behind the classroom. Use Canvas to offer more work. Use Canvas as an instructional tool to offer classworks and that kind of thing. I'm not sure what the last update I gave you on the Florida Virtual Franchise, but we will be able to open our Florida Virtual Franchise in January. We've actually talked to both high school principals and guidance directors. It was part of a long meeting where we think that we're going to be able to recapture FTE this second semester. We'll be able to offer driver's ed, HOPE, personal fitness, and two or three other classes. Those are actually the most enrolled virtual classes by our students, driver's ed and HOPE. And we can offer them through the Florida Virtual Franchise that we're going to have, and it's going to be up and running in January. And I'll bring a totally separate presentation to you guys about that. The third bullet there is the creation of a web-based lesson plan bank. What we're going to do is, sometime after the school year starts, we're going to launch a competition for teachers to design the best lesson plan. And the lesson plan is going to have to be in a digital format so that we can upload it to a web bank. And then we'll award somebody some prizes for designing the best lesson plan. But what it's going to do is now start to create a district bank of lesson plans. And over the course of time, we could end up with enough lesson plans for every course we teach. And then we wouldn't need necessarily to buy curriculum anymore. So it's the first step towards something like that. And then the last goal there, increased use of technology as a student management system. Want to make sure that everybody understands the new focus system, how to use it, the gradebook portion of it, how the parents can access the parent portal to, gain information, but also teachers can communicate back and forth with parents. And then make sure that we're using everything we can from Performance Matters. Performance Matters actually has a assessment component where it has a test item bank now, and we can make many assessments and then use them now for that as well. And then the measurable outcomes are all there. The first one on how those teachers on special assignment / technology, how effective they are, we'll do that with a survey from the teachers they serve at the end of the year. Cost-benefit analysis of a take-home one-to-one, virtual franchise, digital lesson plan bank. We're going to be able to really analyze our use of Focus. We're going to be able to see what kind of numbers we get from how many parents log in to Focus, how many teachers, how much they use it for generating test items and all that kind of stuff. We're going to be able to get all kinds of hard data from that. But basically, one of the questions on the parent climate survey will be about Focus. How easy was it to access Focus and communicate with your teacher and all that kind of thing.
Focus, when is it going to be up?
It's up right now.
No. You are directed to get a registration and sign on, but there's no
right.
information.
Right.
And you were taken off eSembler, so there's nothing there. And when I talked to the guidance counselor today, she
right.
said she didn't think Focus was going to be up until after the kids are in school. So just make sure that there's
something. Yeah, because people are logging
in
today at one of the schools.
They
have
they
all kinds of stuff. But Let me check.
Just check.
Check with Bruce. I thought we were good to go.
But I'm going to tell you, you're going to have a lot of parents going, woo-hoo.
I did have a similar experience.
Okay. Yeah. No, I did have someone call me and say, I can't log in. And I have a kid that was here last year, so it's not like I'm new. So,
okay.
All right. I'll have to check with Bruce. That's a good question.
Thank you.
All right. That's it for all the different five focus areas that I had and all the stuff that I've been in. We have 5 minutes.
Good job.
Go ahead, Claudia.
Yeah, excellent job. That was, of course, exciting. Just two things I wanted to bring up. There was no mention of any kind of ESD audit, and I don't know if that's related to the Wabasso situation, but we do have, over the years, we've had a lot of issues with ESD, with non-compliance with state mandates, and things of that nature. So, you know, that's something that you might want to consider. And then when you talked about evaluation protocols, you know, there are evaluations for teachers, there are evaluations for principals, there's an evaluation for the superintendent, there are evaluations for the assistant principals. Are there going to be any protocols for the rest of the leadership, i.e. your cabinet, your assistant? You know, how are they evaluated and what transparency will there be around their evaluations? Because, you know, sometimes there are issues, and that's something that's not, to our knowledge, evaluated. We don't hear about those evaluations.
Okay. Yeah, that's just information that needs to be shared with you then, because there is a district leader evaluation assessment tool. It has to be approved by the state. It has been approved by the state. It's logged in at the state, you know, DOE. I've reviewed our practice here. The tool is sound. I don't know how well it was used, but we have the tool we need. You know, we have the assessment tool. I just make sure we use it. And you guys, you know, can be shared information regarding how it's used and that kind of thing. Okay?
Anyone else?
Well, I would agree with, I would want to see the ESD audit along with, and I think that's just, we could just do that a discussion. Your plate is full. I think you've done a fine job. But I have had people approach saying, and this is where I don't know what is we're doing. I've tried to investigate. It seems like we are sending home flyers, and it could be the liaison. But it's not just Wabasso School. It would be the ESC programs in all the schools. And there is a bit of funding issues at the back end when the children graduate high school or they time out at 22.
Right.
The funding, you know, is there's a 10-year waiting list. And if a general parent who can't get that information from whatever social service group is providing that funding, can't give you the name right now, and they're hoping that the school would use it as a, to make sure that information is getting out, and unless a parent has cancer or something like that, do they get popped up? But in general, it seems that, I just want to make sure that it's a different area within
right.
our school district of education, a different type of education, transition might involve more social service, I would say. And that seems to, I'm guessing that if I was approached, that the community was approached. I think Ms. Francis is doing a wonderful job in the short time there. I have high hopes for that individual school.
Right.
But maybe not only the audit, but that's an issue that I think that we're concerned about and that I'd like to talk about. I want to address it at a time in a discussion, but that probably would be a nice, maybe I'll put it on a discussion for the next time, and we can talk about some of the things the community has come to us
right.
with. And it may, you know how the community sometimes hears things, or we don't know about things, and
right.
it might be being done, but just
right.
not again because the PIO or the information, or we just don't have all that information. So I'm sure if I was approached and I had tours of schools and ARC and things like that, I'm sure everybody else was. So I'll bring that up at a different time, but maybe that's where that audit can come in.
We are just about up at a time. Hard time limit right now.
Sure.
I think, well, one thing we need to talk about is what's the next step from here.
Right.
Okay. These are our goals. This is not something that's mandated by the state. We have to meet a deadline, so it's a kind of a working document. How do you want to proceed now? Do you want to, I mean, if you've got individual things like this that you'd like to say, again, remember, we're talking about goals. We're not talking about down in the weeds. We're talking
yeah.
about goals. You know, we have individual conversations with Dr. Rendell. We can come back together at another session like this and try to fine-tune after some of those discussions. It's up to you guys. We just need to collectively figure out how you want to proceed.
Well, I remember, right, and maybe attorney can tell, part of our because I'm hazy on this, part of our contract, weren't we supposed to give him, I mean, that gives him time, measurable goals and measurable goals, which I think I'm I'll just speak from my point of view, I'm happy with this and this is fine. Fine-tuning, it's a fluid document and a work in progress, and progress not perfection, and I think this is fine, and we can always discuss specifics, but maybe they turn into, don't we have a timeline that we have to give this in place too? So I don't want to say, yeah, next month, next month, next month.
The employment agreement with Dr. Rendell set June 30 as the deadline for establishing goals. Given the fact that Dr. Rendell actually started as a superintendent on July 1, you know, that deadline is perhaps a little difficult this first year. So going into the following year, June 30 is your deadline for establishing goals. But at this point, I know when you had discussions about establishing superintendent or district goals, it was along the lines of before the school year starts or as soon, you know, as close to the start of the school year as possible so that these goals could then be implemented at the school sites. So.
Yeah, and I would agree with the sentiment that we've talked about this, we've added, discussed it. I think that what I would like to see as a board member is a final copy. If you're going to make any tweaks
right.
to it, I would be concerned about individual people going and pushing individual agendas, because it seems to me that in this meeting, when you brought up things like the PIO, it was board consensus. And if we get into this business of every member's going to go push what they want, then that can start complicating what we've heard here, because
right.
you're going to have to, like, so do I add this? Do I not?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say bring us back your final version sooner rather than later. And then if at that point there's anything, like somebody's like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, something's missing here, we can publicly say, well, you know what, yes or no. But I wouldn't want to put that on you to try to figure out what everybody
right.
is wanting.
The timeline that was established originally was that we would have the discussion session today about the goals, and then the goals would be up for board approval on the 25th. So I feel comfortable making adjustments and adding some data that you guys asked for and putting it on the agenda for the 25th. You'll have plenty of time to look at it. And
All right. Nothing forced down. We'll stand adjourned for just a minute.
Thank you.
Just a minute.
Yeah.
Two minutes ago, we were supposed to have started the...